Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. And we welcome you to Talking.Golf, Rob Hernandez, alongside Gary D'Amato. It is the week after St. Patrick's Day. It's the week after the Players. But boy, Gary, I don't know. It was a big weekend on the basketball front. It is this time every year. It's, if you're a high school basketball fan, that's the biggest week of the year in Wisconsin with the state high school championship. If you're a college basketball fan, between the Horizon League championships and the Big Ten championships and the Big East championships, and with Marquette and Wisconsin, the men's teams being such a big factor in both of those, easy to get easy to lose golf in the shuffle, and a shame because, I didn't get a chance to park myself in front of the TV like I normally do for big tournaments on Sunday. I watched the Players Championship pretty much all the way up until Sunday, but then, boy, yesterday was just, I had the Bucks on in the morning out here. It was a 10 a.m. start out here, and then it was right on to the Badgers, and then we went and caught a Brewer game at night. Didn't have enough time to see all the drama that wound up with Scottie Scheffler winning for the second week in a row, and I saw somewhere where this might be the first time that a guy finishes second to the same guy 2 weeks in a row, because I believe Wyndham Clark was second to Scottie Scheffler at the Honda. And so now it's brought some good drama to the game of professional golf.
Absolutely, Rob. I think the PGA Tour desperately needed a week like this and a tournament like this to get past some of the acrimony and some of the off the course stuff that we've all been talking about for a couple of years now. And boy, it was a great week for the PGA Tour. And you're right. Too bad it was a little bit overshadowed by, Selection Sunday and the conference tournaments, Marquette and Wisconsin making great runs in their respective tournaments, but great finish. Scottie Scheffler. I don't know what else you can say about him right now, Rob. He's not Tiger Woods in his prime, I think, but he's pretty darn close. And it's the kind of deal now where you expect him to be on the leaderboard and in contention, and if he's not, you're surprised. And there's, very few golfers you could say that about over the last 25 years, Tiger being the obvious one, and maybe Jordan Spieth for a couple of years there, but rare company indeed for Scottie.
And he wasn't, totally at the top of his game putting, but it was an improvement, it looked like. Off the tee, he was spectacular. And, into the green, pretty solid in relation to the field. But, putting has been the one thing that until last week kind of held him back a little bit here of late. But now it seems as though that has been shored up to the point where he can do what he's done these last 2 weeks. And, I mean, that's a great sign for the tour. I think when John Rahm departed, you wondered, can Scottie Scheffler or somebody else, hold up their end of the dominance to give the tour that, that missing link and with Rahm gone, and it has. And I think those of us who really wonder how long LIV can do what they're doing, because we've watched a lifetime of the PGA Tour continue to generate talent. I still think that, we've lost Rahm, but we've seen Scottie Scheffler elevate his game, and there's probably others behind him that, will be there as well before the end of the major championship season, and that's what makes the next 4 months really exciting.
Yeah, Wyndham Clark certainly has elevated his game, going back to the U.S. Open last year, and ever since then, he's been really good. Will Zalatoris coming back from that back injury and surgery, I think he missed the cut at the Players, but he's had a couple of good weeks since he came back. So it's good to see these guys stepping up and sort of challenging Scottie at this point. But, wow, he's been incredible. Rory McIlroy, I saw that he made he made 29 birdies in the Players, Rob, but he's just making too many mistakes, too many water balls. And I don't know if it's a focus issue with him or if I'm not sure what it is with him, but if he could eliminate some of those mistakes, he'd be right there with Scottie Scheffler too.
And I think part of it is, last year when Steve Stricker won the senior PGA championship, there were a number of situations where instead of trying to go for greens in two, he would lay up to a number and basically laid up to his wheelhouse.
because he struggles with the wedges. It makes me wonder if that might not be an approach that would benefit Rory McIlroy because you're going for par four greens, and if you go in the water, you take your drop, you chip on, and you tap in, and you walk away with a par. I'd like to see what he could do with the wedge. But this is the generation in which I think professional golf lives, where it is trying to put on a bit of a show. It's trying to make people, ooh and ah at how far you can drive the golf ball. And unless they roll back the golf ball, that's the way it's going to be. But I'm with you. I think he needs to kind of change the approach at certain times and take maybe throw a little bit of caution to the wind in terms of course management to try to, maybe take that next step. It seems to be working for Scottie Scheffler. I don't think he's quite the gunslinger that Rory McIlroy is. Rory McIlroy is almost like the Brett Favre of golf right now.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. The interceptions and the touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
Scottie might be the most disciplined player on the PGA Tour, or certainly among them. And then you add that to his talent, his driving, his ability to drive the ball long and in the fairway. And now he's become a better putter since he made a putter switch. So that's a tough combination to beat. He does not beat himself. You have to go out and beat Scottie Scheffler right now.
The couple names that were in the top 10 that, we did sit around on Saturday after I played a little golf in the morning. A group of us got together and we were sitting around watching, the players, and Maverick McNealy popped up on the screen. He was in, contention until 72 on Sunday. That's a guy that, when I was at the USAM the year that Jack Schultz and a couple others from Wisconsin were out at Riviera and the other club out there in Beverly Hills, and they didn't have a place for the media to eat lunch. They just sent us in the players' room for the AM, and I sat down at the table, and then some kid pencils up next to me, and I couldn't tell who it was until someone said, "Well, hello, hey Maverick, how you doing today?" And so it was Maverick McNealy, and he was a star at Stanford, and like a lot of the young players coming out now, not all of them are Ludwig Åberg or Åberg and can make that immediate splash. And I don't think Maverick McNealy quite had the benefit of PGA Tour U that Ludwig has capitalized on. But, there's another guy, Maverick McNealy's got a world of talent and could be the next guy that dominates in a Rory-like fashion. And, he's finally, starting to show signs of that. But, boy, to your point, Gary, about, how much this leaderboard meant for the PGA Tour, you had, Scheffler and Schauffele battling for most of the final round. Brian Harman just hangs around. He won the British last year. And this week bounces back from an opening round 72, which really was not a good score on a course that was yielding a lot of low ones. Matt Fitzpatrick, you've got the worldwide leaderboard with Fitzpatrick, Siwoo Kim, and Hideki Matsuyama. And then, you've got Åberg, Sahith Theegala, who's been, again, kind of quietly there making a name for himself the last, three or four years. And then Maverick McNealy. It's a great mix of players. And, for all the bashing that, the PGA Tour gets about losing the marquee to LIV, well, that marquee just continues to kind of replenish. And I think, we'll talk here in a second about, what we can expect going forward, who might be the names to watch in the major championship season. But, I like the star power they have. And we haven't even mentioned some of the guys that we always seem to lean on, like Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, Ricky, I think finished dead last among those guys who made the cut. And I think Justin Thomas missed the cut among a few notable names who missed the cut. Those guys, their games have fallen off a little bit. But, yeah, if they come back, it's a cyclical thing. If they discover the magic putter or, change coaches and find something that unlocks something in their swing, they could be right back in the mix. It was a great leaderboard. Rob, I still wish Rahm and Brooks Koepka were at these big tournaments, though, because those guys would probably be in the mix too and make it all the more exciting.
If I could get four on a pullback, those two plus Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau, those are the ones that I miss the most. someone did ask in one of the interviews this week about who was the most impactful golfer they saw, you know, when they were on the way up, and someone did mention DJ. And I guess I maybe don't appreciate what Dustin Johnson meant to professional golf, because he also attacked it a different way, and he was very powerful, much like Brooks Koepka. And of course, we have an attachment, I think, to Koepka because he won the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, and and so, you know, I do miss those guys. So now we look forward, though, Gary, you'll be at the Masters in but less than a month or so, and we'll have the live presence there, but it'll be interesting. Is it going to be more of a live versus PGA Tour there, do you think? Or, we saw that the motivation last year, I think, really kind of started to rear its head, where you wondered if the live guys would be a factor, because they aren't grinding, in my opinion, 24/7, you know, every week. And it looks more like a casual round. It looks more like a pro-am out there. And then they have to come to where it's more what purists would say is real golf. They acquitted themselves very well when given the chance. How do you see that potential on-course conflict, you know, the politics of all this aside, but the competition, impacting the major championships where LIV will be a factor?
Rob, I think it's less of a storyline than it was at last year's Masters, where we had, a great leaderboard and Koepka and Phil Mickelson coming over from LIV and tying for second. I don't think it'll be quite that storyline of the butting of heads of LIV versus PGA Tour, but it does add immense star power to the Masters to get those guys, those former champions, back, and to get, you know, Brooks Koepka in the mix and Dustin Johnson, the past champion, all those guys coming back, Phil Mickelson. I think that's going to, you know, that adds another layer to the Masters. But I don't think it's going to be quite the storyline it has been in the past, because we've had 2 years of this now.
So I'm looking at a story from Golf Week late last year. It looks like 9 LIV golfers are exempt for the Masters as of then, and that compared to 18 who competed last year. The PGA, 6 meet the criteria exemption at the end of last season, compared to 16 that played in 2023. And 6 golfers exempt for the U.S. Open compared to 15. So those numbers could be down. I mean, I guess it depends on whether we have any breakthrough in what, you know, and I don't know if you listened to Jay Monahan's news conference last week, Gary, but I didn't get anything out of that tells me that a deal or a peace talks are imminent between LIV and the PGA Tour, despite all the, you know, all the overtures behind the scenes that have taken place, in the last 8 months, 12 months, that, we're supposed to bring those two sides together.
Yeah, I didn't see the press conference, but I did print out the transcript and read it pretty carefully. And it was a lot of lawyerly talk out of Jay, which is typical of him. And it's funny because you talk to people who get Jay in a social setting or interacting with players, and they say he's just a great people person, fun to be around, really connects with people. But then you get him in a setting where he does a news conference, and it's as dry as Tim Finchin. I guess he learned from his predecessor. I'm really looking forward to the Masters, Rob. I can't wait to get down there and see what that leaderboard turns out to be on Sunday. I think it's going to be another great one.
So if you throw Scheffler out, who's the guy that figures to contend in, you know, be the guy that everyone will put, of course, now we've got, Vegas odds on everything at all points during the tournament. But, we've got Augusta National. We've got Valhalla for the PGA, Pinehurst for the U.S. Open. And then what is it? Royal Troon for the Open Championship. Outside of Scottie Scheffler, who do you like as being the most consistent and maybe the guy that or guys that we should not that we're going to put money on this, Gary, but that we should keep an eye on.
Yeah, Wyndham Clark, obviously very hot right now. Second to Scottie the last 2 weeks. You have to throw his name in the mix. And a guy like Victor Hovland, who, really rises to the occasion, I think, in majors. In fact, Rob, I'm in one of those fantasy golf pools where you pick a golfer for every tournament of the year. You have to do it before the year starts, and you can only use a golfer one time. So my picks for the majors were, believe it or not, Scottie Scheffler in the Masters. I picked Rory at Valhalla for the PGA Championship because he's played great there. And I think he's due for another major at some point, right? And then yeah. I picked Victor Hovland in the U.S. Open. And I picked Ludvig Åberg in the British Open or the Open Championship. So, you know, I'll stick with those. That foursome as guys who could really contend in this Masters coming up. I don't think, you know, I always loved Phil in the Masters, but I think he's getting to the point now, although he finished, you know, tied for second last year, I just don't see him making another run again in the Masters. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I don't think I am on that one.
Yeah, it's very interesting because you look at the top 10, you know, guys with top 10 finishes. Scottie Scheffler now with two wins and six top 10s. Xander Schauffele, believe it or not, five top 10 finishes, but, you know, only one second and one third place finish. Sam Burns with four top 10 finishes, but nothing better than a third. Sahith Theegala with four top 10s, but nothing better than a second. Ludvig Åberg with three top 10s and nothing better than a second. You pretty much got to go down to, you know, like you say, Wyndham Clark, a first and 2 seconds. That's pretty solid. And but beyond that, it's very, very even. Right now, the tour average for top 10s is 2. And, you know, we haven't played a ton of events, so there aren't a whole lot of wins. But, you know, a Wyndham Clark showing, a Xander Schauffele showing, you know, pretty solid stuff. And it just goes to show you the any given week factor is still very much alive and well on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, you know, I really like Xander. I love his game, but he just hasn't come through in the big moments yet. And I'll say the word yet. I mean, he still has plenty of time to do that. But he seems not to have his best game and his when he needs it most. On Sunday in contention, he's, you know, backed down a few times. I like his game. And the rest of those guys you mentioned obviously have the credentials and the experience on the top near the top of the leaderboard to do well in majors.
When we talk about any given week, let's segue into college golf, Gary. The Badger men's golf team with a solid sixth place showing, a T6, the Schenkel Invitational down in Statesboro, Georgia. And it's one of those things in college golf where you pick your five based on qualifying and other criteria, and you go with it. And but then you also sometimes get the opportunity to bring along an individual. That happened this past weekend. Daniel Oz played as an individual for the Badgers. Hadn't had a great year so far, but came out with rounds of 66, 70, and 70 and finished T2 individually. The Badgers with a 288, 275, 287 without those scores with Cameron Huss, Jacob Beckman, Coulter Smith, Blake Wisdom, and Spencer Turts. Boy, you know, it's a pleasant problem to have if you're Mike Wilson. You've got a lot of guys playing well right now. And while the others didn't make as many birdies as Daniel did, especially in that first round, 66. They didn't make a whole lot of mistakes, especially on Sunday. 285 was the fourth low round of the day. Actually, 287 they had. So that was, you know, right off the top five were, you know, were all 283 to 285. So you weren't far behind if you were the Badgers. And the 275 in the middle was outstanding and showed a lot of potential. You have Jacob Beckman with a 66, Cameron Huss with a 68. You count a 70 from Blake Wisdom and a 71 from Coulter Smith. You know, right now you're looking again at six deep, and you've got to make the decision at some point here who's that fifth guy going to be. The women at least have six to count for at the Big Tens. The men go five, count four. Gary, what did you make out of what the Badgers did down in Georgia?
Yeah, Rob, that second round, anytime you're throwing out an even par round, you know you've had a pretty good day, which I think they did in that second round. I think, you know, Mike Wilson has as much depth as that program has had in recent years. And you're right, you know, he didn't pick Oz to be in the counting scores, but maybe he will be going forward. He probably should be going forward. And it's nice to have that luxury, although, you know, a good player or two gets left out of the lineup then, and then they've got to prove themselves either as an individual or in practice or in qualifying and come back and crack the lineup. But it's great to have that kind of depth, which I don't think Wisconsin's had in recent years.
No, and unfortunately for the Badgers, they started slow in the fall. And as I wrote about after their win at the Invitational at the Ford, you know, they statistically have a lot of work to do. And this helped, you know, finishing ahead of eight teams or seven teams and tied with another, you know, gives you a winning record and gets that gets you closer and closer to that 500 mark. I can't remember what it was that that I wrote that they had to, you know, the number of wins they had to accumulate, you know, in terms of where they finish in relation to other teams between now and the end of Big Tens, but it was doable. And but now they have a month off almost before the Hawkeye Invitational down at Finkbein. And my recollection of the Hawkeye Invitational is not one I don't think that Wisconsin has maybe been to frequently in the past. I know Marquette has, and but it's a course that should allow some low scores, more of a traditional golf course down there in Iowa City. And that's the last tune-up before the Big Ten Championship, which will be hosted by, I believe, Ohio State. It's Scioto Country Club just outside Columbus. So a lot riding on that Iowa Invitational, Gary. And I know Mike was kind of kicking himself because he felt maybe he overscheduled in the fall, but they had opportunities. And it's hard to pass up you know, Aaron Hills right away because that was, I believe, the practice round for Aaron Hills was their first time together because that was per NCAA rules. You can't start until, you know, you get, I think, until class starts or something like that. And so that was a hard one, and they finished 11th out of 12 there. But, you know, I mean, you like to give your kids the opportunity to play great courses. So that was part of the rationale. But now they've got a lot of decisions to make in a short period of time.
Yeah, well, this is what you sign up with when you play Division I golf. There are some decisions to be made, but the good thing is that Coach Wilson has a deep lineup. He has four or five guys, maybe six, playing pretty well. So the pressure's on a little bit, but these guys are responding. At least they responded this past weekend, and maybe they can do it again in their next tournament.
Not to go back and look, but I know that the substitution rule that we've talked about before on past Talking.Golf's is in play at the NCAA regional, but I don't know if it's in play at the Big Tens. I don't think it is. And actually, it is because last year they started Graham Moody and then filled in with Max Schwartz, and then the third round got canceled. So I stand corrected. I didn't think it was, but it is. So you've got that, you know, part. So I'm sure he'll bring along the alternate. But I, you know, everybody seems to be trending in the right direction, and that's the positive thing. And you know, we'll see how that goes. Marquette, you know, has an injury to get through with the Boom Sima Ari with a wrist injury, and we'll see where that goes. And then the Badger women, as we kind of transition into your sweet spot from today, I managed to catch up with Chloe Chan. I saw something on Facebook over the weekend that she had shot a course record at U Ridge. The post didn't really clarify whose course record they say she broke, but among women's collegiate golfers, I could only find rounds of 65 at the NCAA tournament back in 98, and I remember these rounds because I was there. Grace Park did it the first two rounds, and then Jenny Shashuraporn did it in the second round, shot 65, and then Ashley Bauer of Michigan at the 2010 Big Ten Conference Championships, and then current LPGA star Leona McGuire shot a 65 at U Ridge in the 2018 NCAA Madison Regionals. But Chloe Chan with a 9-under par 63 with an eagle birdie finish. And, Gary, I don't care what tees you're playing at U Ridge, 16, 17, and 18 are not that easy.
No, they're not. And that's, you know, you mentioned the foursome of golfers that she surpassed with that 63, and that's some high-quality golf there. You know, Grace Park was a star on the LPGA Tour until she had a bunch of injuries. And Jenny Shashuraporn, of course, nearly won a U.S. Women's Open. And you're right, Leona McGuire is playing very well on the LPGA Tour. So to be two strokes better than those four, that's quite an accomplishment for Chloe.
Now, the Badgers had a bit of a tough go of it last week at the Briar Creek Invitational out in South Carolina, finishing 16th out of 17. But a really good field there with Michigan State, North Carolina State, Purdue, leading the way, Chloe had a bit of a more pedestrian finish compared to her victory out at Westbrook Village here in Arizona. She was 75, 77, 76, T58. So, and then Camille Kuznick, who had a really good showing out here in Arizona, kind of fell back a little bit with 82, 78, 73. So Todd Erlein, still, even though things look good at Westbrook, with a bit of a, you know, still some rough edges to sort out there, but they have a little bit more time to deal with. I think they've got two events before Big Tens. They've got the Bruzzy coming up at the end of March in Texas, which actually in Ardmore, Oklahoma, North Texas is the host. So that's kind of a different area of the country that they haven't really competed in the past. So that'll be an interesting one. And then they go to Columbus, Ohio at the Scarlet Course for the Therese Hessian Buckeye Invitational. Last year it was that wild tournament over at Muirfield Village that Barbara Nicklaus hosted, but the course was just set up way too tough and there was a lot of carnage. So much like March Madness here, Gary, with the basketball end of it, it's time to perform. I mean, that's the bottom line for these teams. And then UW Green Bay will get in the mix here in about a week or so. You know, you've got to come ready to play here for these final 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. And that's what it's all about in college golf is coming down to conference tournament time and trying to get those automatic berths in the NCAA tournament and fighting for at-large berths, which is a tall order, I think, for our state teams. They're going to have to do something really special to get at-large berths. But, you know, Marquette has been great in the Big East. The men's team has been great in the Big East tournament, won a couple times in the last few years, and probably will make a run at it again. And then the Badger men and women are playing pretty good and would be an upset special to see either one of those two win a conference tournament.
So we'll continue to monitor that. A lot of good golf being played around the country. And, of course, you can always find the scores daily as Wisconsin golfers compete at the college level on our scoreboard page at wisconsin.golf. Gary, I wanted to ask you here before we wrap up Talking.Golf for this week. You made a trip out to Erin Hills last week. And while it's still we're about 2 months, I think, out from Erin Hills opening for the season, there's a lot going on out there. What did you see, and where are we at, especially they were working on bunkers last time we talked?
Yeah, they're renovating all their bunkers. You know, they're the original sand and liners that were put in, you know, 2005 and 6 when the course 4, 5, and 6 was being built. So, you know, the bunkers are 15 years old, if not a little older, and it's just time to replace the sand and the liners in those, especially as we gear up for the 2025 U.S. Women's Open. They're building some tees on three different holes, Rob. I would assume that's for the U.S. Women's Open. On holes number 7, 10, and 18. And then they're doing a lot of work in the clubhouse. They're building a women's locker room. That's not going to be for the Women's Open. They're going to have to build a special temporary structure, I think, for the Women's Open for 156 players. But for women playing guests at Erin Hills who have had to use the basement locker room down in the lodge, the original clubhouse, they are now building a women's locker room on the clubhouse up on the hill, the big main clubhouse, for women guests. So, and they're expanding the golf shop and doing some nice things in the clubhouse. So it was a beehive of activity around last week when I was out there.
Now, I was interested to see if they've named the original clubhouse the Lodge. I think that's a cool name for it. I think it's, yeah. You know, when we were there for the State Am, you know, the food in the restaurant was outstanding. And, yeah. And of course, you know, if the wind's not blowing over the golf course, it's not bad to sit outside and look out over the golf course. The views from that particular building are exceptional. I love the way Erin Hills does things very discreetly, and it's always at a high level of quality. It makes a great golf course and a great facility even better.
It does. You know, the reason I went to Erin Hills was to interview Chris Schoonover, who's now the general chair of the 2025 U.S. Women's Open, Rob. And I'll tell you what, they pay such attention to detail. Just like all the high-end destination courses, it's all about the customer experience there. And when you play Erin Hills, it's more than just around the golf. You're paying a premium price, but you're getting a premium experience that you just don't get at other places. And the team there, John Morissette and Jim Lombardo, the golf shop guys, the PGA professionals, Zach Reineking, the superintendent, and his team, they're all dedicated to giving the customer a great experience, and that's what makes it, you know, one of the best public courses in the nation.
And it's just, it's going to be fun. The run up to the U.S. Women's Open will be fun to kind of follow that process this year. And, you know, it would be great. It'll be interesting to see how, if we have a Wisconsin presence in it, because, you know, we've got some high level amateurs, many playing college golf, but, maybe as we record this podcast on a Monday, Gary, a person whose name to keep an eye out for would be Emily Lauterbach. I know she's been working hard on her game out here in Arizona, but today she's at an LPGA Tour Monday qualifier out in California for the event there this week. And so we'll see. She's got Epson Tour status and hasn't gotten in the first couple of events, but is hoping to get in the one in Arizona coming up. But there's, you know, a couple of LPGA events here that she can try to qualify for. And that's part of the process, you know, trying to qualify. You know, four events is kind of a different pressure that, you know, you're not used to at the college level. Somewhat similar to, you know, your qualifying rounds within your team. But, I mean, you're going for two spots on a Monday. And if you make it, everything's great. And then you've got, you know, 2 days to prepare for a course you've never seen. But she would be the one that I think would command a following just a few miles up the road from her home in Heartland.
Yeah, I love everything about Emily's game. Boy, I don't know her very well, Rob. I covered her in winning a women's state amateur. Don't know her quite as well as you do, but I did meet her when I think the inaugural drive chip and putt championship at Augusta National when she qualified to go down to the Masters. And that was when she was, I don't know, she must have been 10 or 11 years old. So she's been on a fast track to this kind of success for a long time. And I really like her game. She's got a solid game and from the tee ball down to the putting green. She's really, really solid.
And while we're on the topic of U.S. Women's Opens, your sweet spot item on Sayre Pack really made me chuckle. Because.
Yeah.
She basically wants nothing to do with golf, or at least competitive golf, and maybe
right.
Any golf. Her quote was, you know, was just kind of revealing in how hard it was to do what she did, and now that she looks back, she has no idea how she did it.
Yeah, that was funny. I found that in her transcript to Advance, a tournament that's named after her, the Fur Classic, Sayre Classic,
yeah.
It's called.
Yep.
Yeah, but she was quite revealing in that interview, saying that, you know, she's around the game a lot because she's associated with tournaments, but she doesn't really play it anymore, and she thinks the game is too darn hard, and she doesn't know how she did what she did back when she was 20 years old. It was she's always been fun to follow, and her interview is her English, I will say, has gotten better, Rob, over the years, that's for sure, because she barely spoke English when she was 20, and now her quotes are pretty funny.
Very similar to Lorena Ochoa, who walked away from the game, and we haven't seen her since. It's been
great.
Yeah. Annika Thorenstam's gotten back in the game, at least at the senior level, and then giving back to the Women's APT Tour, which is now named after her foundation. So that's pretty neat. And then, you know, you and I have really encouraged a lot of the mid-AM, you know, former college golfers that we covered early in our career to get back at it. And you know they still got game. I'm sure you caught what Nikki Stricker did on the Wednesday caddy competition at the 17th
yeah.
hole at Sawgrass. Hits it to 9 feet. 9 feet, Gary. What do they call Greg Gard? The silent assassin. I think the more that she plays competitive here at this age, she's going to keep doing well. She had a taste of it at the U.S. Senior Women's Am last year out here in Arizona. But, boy, you know, she – especially with the competition that goes on with her, Bobby, Izzy, and Steve, that was fun to watch.
That was fun to watch. Yeah, just steps right up there and knocks it stiff. I think Steve's quote was that he would take four of those, and too bad he only got a chance to try to take two of them because he missed the cut at the Players' Championship. But that was cool to see Nikki step up and do that with a lot of eyes on her. That's a little bit of pressure for a caddy to step up there and do that.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Also in Sweet Spot this week, I finally heard back from Jordan Hahn, and you know, when you're transitioning back into a real job you know, it, you've got to balance your time. But it was nice that he got back to me because I was interested to hear about what went into his decision to leave professional golf. And, you know, he finished 63rd in the Fortinet Cup standings last year on the PGA Tour Canada. And that wasn't bad, but it wasn't enough to get him into, you know, advanced stages of Q school. But he decided that, you know, he wasn't sure if he had status this summer, but he did decide it was time to get, you know, use his degree from the UW and get a what we would call a real job. He's working for an insurance company here in Phoenix. And then it came out that he was actually conditionally exempt on PGA Tour Americas. But, you know, he, much like Neil Johnson, who we wrote about a couple months ago, he's looking forward to getting amateur status back. And what was Neil's quote? Not paying $100 to grind for $75. So, or something like that. But, boy, Jordan Hahn, you know, really made a good go of it. And, you know, was exempt every year he was out on one of the tours or the other, and had status right away out of college, and had the ability to go super low. And I think it's that ability, Gary, that as an amateur golfer is going to make him, you know, I don't want to say, you know, was it Stuart Hegestad that is the career amateur who yeah. is kind of that guy that, you know, everybody looks to in the AM, the mid AM. But I think Jordan's got that firepower that if he keeps, you know, a club in his hand, you know, a few times a week, he's going to be quite good at the amateur level again.
Yeah, thanks for supplying that. No, Rob, that one really surprised me. Caught me out of, came up from out of the blue for me, Rob. I thought I'd be seeing Jordan's name a lot this year in some of those PGA Tour Americas events. He gave it a go, but, you know, compared to a lot of guys who have been trying for years, his attempt to reach the PGA Tour is really quite short. And as he mentioned, he had some real breakthrough moments. So this one surprised me a little bit, Rob.
Well, and you know, it speaks to how tough it is on the developmental tours. And I don't think it's going to get any better with, you know, the elevated events, the designated events, the competition with LIV. If the LIV guys come back, you know, and I think we heard a lot of that dialogue. You know, the news conferences, especially watching them on Golf Channel and watching them kind of unfold in the line of questioning, the questions have become quite complex for these guys who, especially the Rory McIlroys, the Jordan Spieths, the guys who have been very outspoken about LIV. And Scottie Scheffler was very revealing about LIV, you know, and because I don't think these guys are going to welcome those guys back, you know, with open arms if there isn't a, you know, an inherent penalty for it. And, but for those guys to come back, there's going to be, need to be the whole financial, component to golf is going to be, is going to have to be nailed out and, or nailed down. And they're going to have to figure out how they're going to pay for all this, who gets the money, and then how do we develop the players that eventually will replace the ones that are fighting the battle on the front line. It's not a situation that I have any answer for, Gary. But
no.
To see, you know, someone like Jordan Hahn kind of, you know, give it about, you know, 4 or 5 years and say, I just can't do it. I mean, that's as talented as a guy as we've seen come out of Wisconsin a number of years, still the career record holder in stroke average for the Badgers. And, you know, that says a lot.
Well, it makes me wonder, Rob, if this is a good time or a bad time to be an elite young player, college player just coming out of college. You know, because the PGA Tour seems to be moving toward a smaller tour with fewer guys playing in bigger events for more money. But you wonder what's going to happen. I mean, the PGA Tour, historically, you know, there have been 200 guys who could tee it up on any given week. Or, you know, there were events opposite major championships that would, you know, open up spots for a lot of guys. And you wonder what's going to happen, all that. You wonder if it's going to be harder and harder to crack that egg and get to that highest level.
At the same time, we've also heard word that, you know, a number of longtime sponsors are leaving the PGA Tour because they can't keep up with this continued request for elevated purses, elevated status. And will those sponsors support a secondary tour or a second-tier tour, or will they pour more of their money into the LPGA Tour or other, you know, other areas of sport? We certainly have no shortage of sports. We've got this combined XFL, USFL starting up here again as they try to, you know, hit us with football year-round. It's to me, it's a fascinating time in professional sports to see how all the money that is needed to do what they're doing is going to perpetuate this. The contracts in the team sports, and in this case, the purses in the independent contractor sports.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, as we look a few years down the road, Rob, what's going to happen to the Korn Ferry Tour? What's going to happen to the Champions Tour, for that matter, which has been to some degree propped up by the PGA Tour? I mean, if the PGA Tour is going to concentrate on these huge big money events and smaller fields and paying these guys millions of dollars in every tournament, can they support the Champions Tour? I'm sure that there's guys 50 and over or about to turn 50 who are a little worried about what the future looks like.
Yeah, so it's something worth, you know, I don't have any answers other than I see a level of golf now that we never seen out of the college ranks, you know, when we started covering the sport. And it would be a shame to kind of derail all that's been done to promote that. From the first tee and the PGA Junior League on up, you've got more kids chasing the dream right now. And if you close too many doors, I think it's going to have a domino effect elsewhere in the game. So we'll see. Gary, you notice that we didn't talk weather and we didn't talk course openings this week. On our call, Jim Kelce, our staff call this week, Jim Kelce says that there's snow predicted at the end of the week. Are we really going back to winter, Gary? This can't be happening. High school golf will start. They're supposed to start practice a week from today.
Well, that's perfect timing, right? You can almost expect that to happen. We have, you know, seven, eight weeks of great weather, and spring is ready to burst, and all of a sudden, you know, the 10-day forecast looks pretty ugly. I mean, it's not horrible, but, you know, highs in the mid to high 30s with a couple days for snow chances. So it's not anything like the weather we've had the last 5-6 weeks, that's for sure.
So it's with great reluctance that I even look at the official Weather Channel forecast for the Milwaukee area. Aside from the fact that while we're recording the podcast here on a Monday, it's 30, and it feels like 20 outside Gary's window. As we look ahead, it's going to bottom out Saturday with a high temperature of 32, a low of 28. But then next Monday, back up to 50. But I'm just not seeing that number again for a while yet. So,
Yeah, it's not. I got in 9 holes at Ives Grove over the weekend, Rob, and might be the last time I touch my clubs for a couple of weeks here. I hope not, but it's kind of looking that way.
All right. Well, we'll keep monitoring the forecast, and if courses reopen, we will definitely make mention of that. In the meantime, Gary, enjoy the week, and we'll talk golf again next week.
All right, Rob. Thank you.
For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.